Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi. Bava Basra Kufnun Tes. We got a couple of lines down, but around the Amud Aleph, but perhaps let's just go back to the top. Let's do a quick refresh. So yesterday we started with Shalchu Mitam. There was a halacha sent from Eretz Yisrael. The initial wording of that halacha was a bit confusing, and the Gemara sought to revise it. Now the way the wording went was that there was something with a son borrowing, selling, and then he can take it back, and the question was why, and this is going to be a very hard halacha. V'zuhi shekosha b'dinei mamnus, a very difficult halacha regarding monetary, halachas. V'zuhi shekosha b'dinei mamnus, one of the harder, more difficult things to understand regarding monetary laws. Okay, so let's see again. Let's just start the bottom of Kufnun Chesem at Beis. Last couple of words. Eli Itmar, Hachi Itmar, up on Kufnun Tes. Hachi Itmar. So the Alocha, let's propose that the Alocha really was meant to say as follows. Quote, Ben Shemachar B'nichsi Ovef, B'chayi Ovef, Umeis. So let's give them names. We have Yaakov, whose son was Ruvain, whose son was Chanoich. Okay, so grandfather is Yaakov, son is Ruvain, grandson is Chanoich. When we speak about the Ben, we're speaking about Reuven, the son of Yaakov. Ben Shemachar B'nichsi Aviv, B'chayi Aviv. He sold off his father's assets during his father Yaakov's lifetime. He's not yet the owner, although he's expecting to be Yerush, that property later on, but currently he sold it as a non-owner. So he sold them like, futures, on account of the future, Umeis. Now let's say Yaakov died as well as Reuven. Comes along Chanoich, who'd like to take possession of that property. He says, look, my father is a Yerush of my grandfather's assets, and I'm entitled to be Yerush my father. Exactly. The son has a right to take it back from the buyers. Which, of course, is very difficult to understand. Why? Because the buyers can tell the grandson, Avuch Mazbin, look, your father sold the asset, and you, Va'at, who's trying to gain possession on account of being a Yerush of that person who already sold it, how are you going to take it back? How are you going to gain possession, Va'at Mapik? You know, take it away from us? What right do you have to do that? And therefore, it's a very difficult halacha to understand, but that's the way it is. Says the Gemara, what do you mean? Actually, it's very understandable. It's very rational that we would allow the grandson, Chanoich, to extract the property. You know why? Well, my kushi, what's the problem? Dilma Matsi Omar, look, the grandson could respond to the buyers, Mikoich Avua. You're making a big mistake. You're misunderstanding the laws of Yerusha. I'm not getting it from my father, Reuven. In which case, you would be right, because he sold it. I have no right to, I'm getting it directly from my grandfather. I'm bypassing my father. I'm getting it from Yaakov, my grandfather. I'm coming on account of my father's father. So it never arrived in Reuven's possession for you buyers to have a claim on that. Teda. In fact, I'll prove this point. This concept is mentioned is alluded to in a pasuk in Tehillim. Tachas aveisecha. Right, it's a good omen to the Besura Toiva to the son, to Reuven. Tachas aveisecha, you're going to have children to take over the family, tradition. Tachas aveisecha, yubanecha, your children are going to take over for your father. So basically we see that a grandson is considered, an uninterrupted link, uninterrupted chain, a link in an uninterrupted chain directly stretching back to the grandfather. Just the same way, Lesar Machal Oris, I'll be, prominent people. In any case, from this pasuk we see that, there's a direct link from grandson to grandfather. So what's the big deal? This halacha is fully understandable. Apparently this was not the halacha that they had in mind. Ela ikasha, rather. So we're looking for a difficult halacha. In dine mamonis, trying to make trouble, trying to make problems. Give me something that's problematic, that's hard to understand. This one was simple. Ela ikasha, hakash. So apparently it was alluding to a different halacha. Let's propose another case, which appears to be difficult to understand. It's a bit similar with one little twist, one little change. Ben Bechor, so Reuven, the son of Yaakov, was not an ordinary son. He was a Bechor, a firstborn, who was entitled to an extra portion of his father Yaakov's assets. And he sold that extra portion. Oh, that's the difference. Shemachar chelek Bechor b'chay aviv. Umeis b'chay aviv. Everybody died. Reuven died during Yaakov's lifetime, and ultimately Yaakov died as well. And now the grandson, Chanoich Benoi, the son of Reuven, Moitzi medelakuches. He can take that chelek b'chayr from his father's buyers. Because look, they say our father never got it to sell. He never had the ability. He never really was the owner. But it's a very difficult monetary halacha to understand. Why? What's the big deal? Avu mazben v'yu mafik? How could Reuven sell and his own son take it back? What's the big deal? V'chitei mechinami. Amar mikoyich avu da'abakasina. What do you mean? They have the same claim as before. We're coming straight from the grandfather. Oh, here it's different because it's not the regular, standard Yerusha allocation. It's the Chelek Bechera. And that, we know, would have to go through Reuven. He's the Bechera. Chanoich is not a Bechera of Yaakov. Reuven is a Bechera of Yaakov. So it must be funneled and channeled through Reuven. But then it stops in its tracks because he sold it already. Reuven did, right? Because the answer is, if you're coming directly from the grandfather, what business do you have touching the chelek b'chayra? You're not a b'chayr. Therefore, it's a hard halacha to understand. Very difficult halacha. What right do they have to do this? What's the big deal? My kushya, do me matzi yom. Why can't Chanoich say, look, I am going directly to my grandfather. I'm standing in place of my father. I'm like a b'chayr instead of my father. Interesting suggestion, interesting concept there. That they're introducing here. And the Gemara sort of accepts this claim. They have a solid argument. We can disregard our father. Father passed away, okay. We take the place of our father. We consider like a Bechor. Because we substitute for the father. So now we're entitled to the Chelek Bechor, directly from the grandfather. So you buyers who purchased it from our father have no business taking possession. Because our father never got it to be able to sell it. So we're back to square one. The halacha is perfect, perfectly understandable. Ela ikashi hakashi, rather, if we are to find a difficult halacha in Dine Mominus, it's as follows. We shift to a totally different realm regarding edus, halachas of testimony. So we have a story. I have a fellow, Mr. Reuven, who provided edus and a shtar. He signed a document, a loan document, or whatever, for his friend Shimon. And this occurred before Reuven was known as the town robber, right? Before he became a gazlan, which disqualifies him from saying edus. Venasa gazlan, today he's a gazlan. Now Shimon would like to cash in on that shtar, which happens to feature Reuven as one of the signatures. And we have to certify the signature to make sure it's authentic and real. There are two ways to do it. Either the party himself can come and say, look, this is my signature, or somebody else can testify and vouch for it. Well, I know, and I can compare it to another signature that he did elsewhere, and whatever. So which is the proper way in this case? He himself no longer is trustworthy. He's a gazlan. So that's why who ain't a made al ksaviyad, he no longer can testify. He can't say, well, this is my ksaviyad, this is my signature. But ironically, aval achirim eden, others can testify that this, in fact, is Reuven the Goslin's signature. Well, hold it. If Reuven is not trustworthy, maybe the whole thing is a farce. Maybe the whole thing is just a forged fake star. How can you have a case where the person himself is not trusted and others who vouch on his behalf, others who are simply confirming that this is his signature, that will work? I mean, okay, so it's a signature, but maybe he's lying. He's not trustworthy. He's a Muslim. And therefore, this is finally something difficult to understand, pertaining to Dini Mamnes. Vuzui shakasha b'dini mamnes. What's the big deal? My kushya. Dilma, perhaps the halacha pertains to a case that the signature of Reuven had been certified in a bezdin prior to Reuven turning into a Goslin. Okay, so let's say he signed it Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Rosh Chodesh Iyar, he turned into a Goslin. And this thing was certified prior to Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So true, today he can't testify about his signature, but since the signature had been pre-approved, pre-certified, prior to this fellow turning into a Goslin, okay, it's been authenticated, it's been established as a proper shtar, and it's good to go. Irrespective of the fact that he turned coat. Umaygushya. Dilma kagashuch saksav yadeh bebezn. Before he became a Goslin. Perfectly understandable, perfectly fair halacha. Elo yikashya, akashya. Okay, let's try for another difficult halacha. Hayayayideya lo yedus bishtar. Achaloy tipolei b'yirusha. This is very similar to the previous case. Reuven is featured on a shtar, which is seeking to benefit the Shimon, who happens to be a relative, but a distant relative, some sort of cousin, which doesn't disqualify him from testifying on his behalf. It's a relative, but distant enough to be, you know, okay regarding the halachos of Eidus. So a karev, a close relative, cannot testify, but a distant relative can. And this occurred before Shimon passed away. And Shimon happened to be, you know, close enough that Reuven is a heir, is a yerush of Shimon. There's nobody closer than Reuven, so Reuven will ultimately get all of Shimon's possessions, whether his loan documents or his properties, whatever. So this eidus occurred before Shimon died and transferred his assets to Reuven. But now, that's exactly what happened. Shimon passed away, and Reuven was established as the yerush. It was determined that Reuven is Yerush Shimon, including that shtar which features Reuven's own signature. So he's basically testifying for himself. So we are running into a similar situation where, in order to authenticate the shtar, you can't have Reuven himself personally testifying, because he's basically testifying on his own behalf. Right? Hu eini yochel l'kayim ksav yadei, aval acherim yicholin l'kayim ksav yadei. But others can certify his signature. How could that be? How could he not be believed by others yet? Says the Gemara, well, perhaps the same solution as before. It's all a matter of timing. My kushya. Dilma achanami kan shuch sak sav yadei bebezni. That we're speaking that the certification occurred in the bezn prior to the Yerusha, you know, happening, in which case, at that point, we know that it's still okay. Right? So we have prior certification before this issue occurs. Okay, so once it's been established that it's a valid, authentic signature, right, and it was signed in Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so who cares that today, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, Reuven is now an interested party? Doesn't matter, because the certification pertains to a signature which was signed a month ago. Okay, says the Gemara, Ali Kashya Akashya. Oh, now we're going to run into a difficult halacha. Okay, here comes another suggestion. A similar case to before. So he Reuven signed the document on behalf of Shimon. And this occurred before Reuven married Shimon's daughter, turning him into a son-in-law, into a karev, a close relative who's disqualified from offering testimony, providing edus on behalf of his father-in-law. And then, where at this point assumes the reason why a karev is pasul edus is because he's biased. He's not partial. He's an interested party. He feels close to his relative, and he might testify on his behalf. He might even forge a document on his behalf. So, in this case, Reuven signed before becoming a son-in-law. Vadasa chasna, today on Rosh Chodesh Iyar became a son-in-law. At this point, he no longer can testify about his ksav yad, about his testimony, about his signature. He's now a relative, disqualified. We're concerned that maybe, he'll testify that it was. We're concerned that maybe he forged it. It wasn't real. The data is fake. He's just trying to help his father-in-law. But others can authenticate his signature and validate the shtar. That's ironic. Who lay mehemen? So he is not believed. We're concerned that perhaps he forged the whole thing. Maybe it was really signed today, even though it's dated Rosh Chodesh Nisan before it became a problem. But maybe the whole thing is forged and fake. Achrina mehemni. So others are going to be believed. So what? They're going to recognize that this is his chasima. Maybe it happened today. Maybe he's already a kariv. The whole thing was forged. So perhaps we can propose the same solution as before, that it was pre-certified before he became a son-in-law, so that bypasses the question. Really? Quotes Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, no, we're not speaking that it was specifically done in that manner. Even if it was not pre-certified in the Bezdin, it still works. So back to the problem. We don't trust him, because the whole thing could be a farce, a forge, a fake. Maybe it's predated, maybe it's the whole thing's a fake. And others can now vouch on his behalf. So what? Let's say they see his signature and they recognize it as being his. But who says, who tells you when it occurred? Who tells you when? It doesn't speak about timing. Maybe it happened today, maybe forged the whole thing today after he became a son-in-law, in which case he's suspected of trying to help out his father-in-law. My Kushya, says the Gemara, why is this so difficult? You're assuming that a relative is not trusted, and maybe he's forging things. No. Right? That's the basis of your question. The basis for your problem. He forged it, and he misdated it, and it's all fake. Dil magzeres melechi. Maybe really a relative is perfectly trustworthy. That's not the reason. Why is a relative not trusted, not able to testify? It's a gzeres melechi. It's a halacha in the Torah, which you don't necessarily understand. He's not at arm's length, he can't testify on his behalf, even if he's the most honest person. And therefore, the Eloi Mehemen, true, he himself cannot testify to help his, on behalf of his father-in-law, but others are believed. Which means to say, we're not suspecting that he forged it, that he, predated the shtar in a manner which it would appear that it was done before he became a son-in-law, the whole thing's a fake. No, we're not chayshish for that. As soon as we assume that the dating is correct, there's no forgery, it's not just a question of, is it really his signature? Okay, so we get others, we get strangers, independent people to come and certify that, and once they do that, we know. It's his signature signed on the date. Recorded on the shtar. So we're good to go. The reason why a kariv is not qualified to testify, it's not because he's going to lie. Because if you don't believe me, what about Moshe V'Aaron? If you don't accept that notion, I'll bring you a perfect proof. The pursuit, the disqualification of relatives is unrelated to dishonesty. It's a classic Gemara. Moshe V'Aaron. The great leaders, the great duo, Moshe V'Aaron, right? What if they would have wanted to testify for their chosen, for their father-in-laws? Moshe comes to help Yisrael, Aaron comes to help Aminadav. They're not believed. Why? Because we don't trust them? Because they're not going to lie? Chas v'shalom. El agzeres melechu. Shalo yeidu lehem. Rather, it's agzeres, akosav, that they can't testify. Chanami here as well. In our case, the same thing. Agzeres melechu shalo yeid. Al ksavyad lechosnai. A son-in-law can't personally testify, but others could testify on his behalf. So basically, we went through a string of suggestions, thinking they're all difficult to understand, but now we perfectly understand they're all perfectly logical. So what was that elusive halacha, which was the kasha b'dini mamnus, says the Gemara, let's go back to first base, to that case all the way on top that we started today's share with. Ela lo'elam k'daminu mi'kara, which entailed the story as follows. Where his son, Mr. Reuven, sold Yaakov, his father's asset. Yaakov died, Reuven died, right? And now the son Chanoch wants to take back the property, right? So he says, look, Reuven died before Yaakov. He never inherited Yaakov. He never assumed ownership. He never took possession. He had no right to sell it, so I want it. Come the buyers and say, what do you mean? Your whole power is because of your father. You're getting it because your father is the conduit. And we really bought it from your father. Their response is, no, we're going directly to the grandfather. We're bypassing the father. It's a direct flight to the grandfather. And as per your question, the grandchild can have a perfect claim. Direct from the grandfather. It's a pasuk. Tachas avesecha yubanecha. The grandchild directly links to the grandfather. Well, ahu bebracha ksev. That pasuk in Tehillim is a bracha. It's a bracha, says the Rashbam, shatzadikim, yeshlem bonum, bnei bonum liyorisham, k'tilsib b'seif yedekra, sh'tishisemoy, all the way on the bottom, the Rashbam, tishisemoy, l'sarm chalorets. It's a bracha. It's a good blessing. Tzadikim, azoichad, have descendants, fill in for them, take their place. But it's not a halachic, you know, monetary concept being introduced in the pasuk in Tehillim, which would serve as basis for their claim. A bracha ksiv. But in reality, in terms of halacha, no. A grandson never goes directly to the grandfather. He draws from the father. His koyach of Yerusha comes from the father. And in that case, we do have it a bit difficult to understand why the grandchild has a right to extract from the buyers once the father sold it. Says the Gemara, Mimot says, Amrish bracha ksiv, how can you suggest that it's merely a bracha, avalin in din aloi, but doesn't pertain to halacha, it's of mamun, it's of dachay shemishpat. This idea of directly linking to the grandfather, Vatanya, Vatnan. If you recall, we had this Mishnah the other day where we find this concept embedded in that Mishnah. That in fact, you can go directly to the source. Okay, so Nafal Avayis, Olav al-Aviv, Olav al-Marishav, bit of a complicated case. We have a building that collapsed upon two people, him and his father. Okay, so Reuven and Yaakov, or Olav al-Marishav, Reuven and a potential Yerush, you know, a relative that would theoretically transfer to him upon his death. So let's say it's an uncle who has no other descendants. So Reuven died with Yaakov's brother under that rubble. And we're not sure who gets what, because we're not sure who died first. And Reuven had all kinds of debts, all kinds of things that he owed. He owed the ksuba to his wife, he owed the bank money. So sequence here is very important because Yerusha Av Oimrim, and the Gemara assumes Yerusha Av means like this. We have Yaakov, the grandfather, Reuven, the son, they both died under the rubble. We're not sure who died first. And now we have the son of Reuven, who is Chanoich, who's trying to block out the bank. The bank who has a claim against Reuven, his father, he's trying to block him out. He says, look, I'm a Yerush of Yaakov directly. Yerusha Av Oimrim, I'm going to get from my grandfather directly. It never arrived to my father for you to have a claim on that. Haben Meis Rishon, so they're suggesting that Reuven died first, and then Yaakov. And therefore, Yaakov's assets were never transferred to Reuven, which would enable the bank to claim it. Rather, us, grandchildren, are getting it directly from the grandfather. So let's just stop for a second. This is going to be the point that the Gemara is bringing from that Mishnah. So you see, a grandson has a claim directly from the grandfather. Okay, let's put that aside for a second. So that's his claim. Ubal Chayiv, I remember the bank is saying, no, Haav Meis Rishon, perhaps Yaakov died first, transferring his assets to his son Reuven, and now we have a claim on Reuven's assets. V'hakach Meisab, and then Reuven died. Okay, my love, so we're assuming, like we explained, Yerusha Av Bnei. Who are the Yerusha Av who want to take directly from Yaakov? The sons of Reuven, the grandsons. And Marisha, in the second case, when we have Reuven and his Meirish who died, that's Achim. That's his brother. That's Reuven's brother, okay? Not his uncle, his brother. So Reuven and Shimon were under the rubble. We're not sure who died first. And the bank saying, look, Shimon died first, transferring his stuff to Reuven, because there was no other, an absence of another year, closer Yerush. Reuven gets it. We have a claim to that property. And Chanoch, the son of Reuven, is saying just the opposite. Perhaps Reuven died first, and then Shimon. So Reuven never got anything. We go directly from Shimon. So in both situations, we see that they're claiming direct link to the source, bypassing the the stopovers. If you're telling me that a grandson or a nephew can never claim to be going directly to the source, Because that pasuk in Tehillim is just a bracha, right? Chiksiv tachas avayisecha yubanecha. That's only a bracha, bracha chiksiv. If that's so, then what's the grandson claiming in the Mishnah here? Kimeisa ben v'chakach misav. Even if the grandson claims, look, maybe Reuven died and then Yaakov, and I want to go directly to Yaakov. No, you have no right to go directly to Yaakov. Reuven is either way going to serve as a conduit, in which case he's going to get stuck there and he's going to go to the bank because the bank has a claim on Reuven. Mayavi, what good is that claim? Neimelu b'alchev, the bank can say to the kid here, to the kids, Yerusha savua and kashakil. Now we're just taking Reuven's assets because inevitably he goes through Reuven and then gets to you. So in this case, it stops there because we have a prior claim to you. So apparently, this concept is substantiated in this Mishnah. Says more, no. Let's restructure the story. Let's redo the family, you know, tree. La yershe av echav. The discussion here is not between Chanoich, the grandson. He's not around. There's no grandson. Reuven died. Yaakov died. Who died first, we're not sure. The Yershia Av here is a brother. A brother of Reuven. Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Echav or Achiv, one or two, whatever, doesn't matter. Either way, they're saying, look, Reuven died first. He never got Yaakov's possessions. And then Yaakov died. And we're going straight to Yaakov. He's our father. Right? Shvatim. We go straight to Yaakov. So there's no question in this case to have a direct claim to the source. Marisha, when the Mishnah speaks about Reuven and his Marish dying, Achidavua. It's speaking about Reuven and the brother of his father, Esav. So those two under the rubble, not sure which one's first. And the other brothers of Esav are saying, look, Reuven died first, so you never got Esav's stuff. And now Esav died, we get his stuff, not the bank, who has a claim on Reuven. Reuven never got possession of these, he never had a right to these assets. So once we restructure the story, once we rearrange the people here, so we no longer see that concept highlighted in the Mishnah. This point that you can go directly to the source and bypass the middle step. So the conclusion is that this idea of going directly to the source is not really substantiated anywhere. And therefore, in that story with the Reuven sold the asset and then he died, and the grandchild wants the asset away from the Lekuchais, it's a bit difficult to understand how that works. Because the buyers are saying, look, you're only drawing from your father, who's drawing from his father. And once you have to identify with your father, once you have to relate the property to your father, we bought it from your father. He already sold that right. So it's a hard halacha to understand. It still says Rashbam, Umiu hachi ilchasa kadoshochu mitam, tochi spir lehu, but actually this is the halacha. We haven't really found a rhyme for reshes. You know, we couldn't really prove it from any independent source, but this is the halacha, and it stands. And in fact, the Rashbam says, likewise, all the halachas, the whole string of cases that we have, the Eidus and the son-in-law and the robber, they're all valid points and valid halachas. Here comes a brand new sugya. We actually had some mention of this concept back in Perek Yishnoichlan. Bo minei Rav Sheshes. The following question was posed to Rav Sheshes. We know that a son is Yerush's mother. What happens if son dies first and then mother? Is the son still maintaining his rights to Yerusha? I mean, he's not around, but it will go to his brothers from his father's side, whatever, like any other of his assets. Or shall we say that a son is only Yerush if he's around during his mother's passing? But if he's not here, that connection is lost. Be'un ma'u she'yirash es imoy bekever. Once the son is in the kever, will he still maintain his right to be Yerush's mother, pertaining to what? Well, he's not around. To transfer it to his family from his father's side. Lahan chelech lachem enav. Amalur Rav Sheshes Tanisur, Rav Sheshes responded with a brisa, which will prove our point. Ha'av she'nishbe. A father was taken captive far away, and he died somewhere out there. Umeis benoi b'medina, and his son died locally as well. We're not sure who died first, father or son. Or, in the reverse case, uben shenishba, a son was taken captive and died. Umeis avi b'medina, and his father died over here in town. Who died first? Yerushay Av, Yerushay Ben Yachlaiku. So the father's Yerushim, who might maintain that perhaps son died first and then father died, so we get everything from the father, versus the Yerushay Ben, who might say, well, maybe father died first and the son got his inheritance, and now we get his inheritance. So we're not sure which way to go. Yachlaiku, they split it. Now, who's coming to argue with whom? It's all the same people. Right? Let's say the son, right? Yaakov and Reuven died, but there's a son Chanoich, son of Reuven. Either way, he gets everything. Either I'm getting from my father or my grandfather, right? Hechidam, ilem k'diktani. If we'll learn the Brisa verbatim, haninu yarshia v'haninu yarshia ben. What do we have? Two teams, those that are taking from the father, those from the son. I mean, it's all the same person. The grandson gets from everybody. So there's no conflict. Ela lavachi kamar. Apparently, we have to revise the brisa a bit so that we can generate a machlokes, right? Av shenishba umeis ben benoy ben bita b'medina. There's a grandchild here. So we have Yaakov, the grandfather. He has a daughter, Dina, right? And whatever Dina's son's name was. So that son, right, that grandson, died alongside his grandfather in different locations. I'm not sure who died first. Or the other way around, Uben Bite Shenishba, the grandson was taken captive. Umeis Avi Maybe Medina, his grandfather died here locally. So both died. Vlea Dina and Haim now Umeis Bereshu. We're not sure which one died first. So here we, in fact, have two teams, conflicting teams. Because, look, father can be from Shevet, Reuven, right? And the grandson can be from Shevet Yehuda. It relates to his father, right? So it's his daughter's son. It could be from a totally different Shevet, totally different family. Right? Or even, forget about Shvatim. It's different groups of people. Right? The grandfather has one, family tree, and the grandson, his daughter's son, relates to his father, and his father, he's got a whole another set of relatives from his father's side. Yerushia, Yerushia ben Yachlokus. So now we have two teams vying for the Yerusha. The father's team is saying, well, the son died first, so we get everything from the father and the grandfather. And the grandson's team is saying, no, grandfather died first. Grandson is Yerush. How is he Yerush? Because we're assuming the grandfather only had the daughter. He didn't have any other children. So she gets everything, and then it gets transferred to the grandson, despite the fact that she already died. Right? Because we're assuming that grandfather right, they're saying grandfather died first. So everything goes to the daughter and then over to the grandson. Okay, so that's their claim. Now to our point. Okay? V'im Isa, if it were so that a son maintains his Yerusha rights vis-a-vis his mother's assets, even if son died before mother. Okay, that's the question at hand, right? Vivi said, if that's correct, Nihi Nami. So what's the whole conflict here? Nihi Nami the Ben Ma'is Bereisha. Let's for the moment adopt the grandfather's team's claim. Well, they're saying grandson died first, and everything stayed by the grandfather, and we get it. Okay, granted. Let's say grandson died first. It doesn't matter. It will not affect the equation whatsoever because he still will be Yerush. His grandfather. Let's say the mother died already 10 years ago. Right? So now grandson died, and then grandfather still. He'll get his grandfather's stuff. Lirte lavodi imi bekivri. While he's already in the kever, meaning even after his passing, he can be Yerush. His grandfather's assets via his mother. She's the sole Yerush. It goes to her and it goes to the grandson. Even though he's not around. And now here goes. Now he serves as a conduit to transfer to his his brothers from his father's side. Oh, so we see that a son cannot be Yerusha's mother once he passes away. In order to transfer to, you know, to his father's, to his, you know, brothers from his father's side. Basically, he can't. He can't be Yerusha's mother after he passes away. So if he's around when his mother passes away, fine, but otherwise not. I'll prove the same point from a different source, from a different Mishnah we had the other day as well. If we take a look at the other Mishnah, the building collapsed upon himself and his mother. Which way? Mother first, then son? We're not sure. Eluv, Elus are both teams. The Yerushim of the mother, Yerushim of the son. Sorry, Eluv, Eluhim means Beisham Beisil. Right, we have two teams that are, you know, vying for the Yerusha. The mother's team, the son's team. And we had a machlekes and a different Mishnah regarding Beisham Beisil. So now the Mishnah comes and says, by in this case, Eluv, Elu, Moedim, both yeshivas, Beisham Beisil agree. It's a universally accepted halacha shechloke. Both teams split it. It's a suffix, whatever, right? Now, if it were so that a son can be Yerusha's mother even after son passed away, even if, granted, the son died first, as per the other team's claim, doesn't matter. It doesn't inhibit his ability to access his mother's assets. Lirite, li'ime, bikivre, let him get anything from his mother, even if he passed away, it doesn't matter. Vilirite inu la'achi mevu, and pass it on to the, you know, to his family, from his father's side. El lav shmamina, it's clear from this Mishnah, ena ben yerushim bekever, lahanchil la'achim av, that a son is only yerushim mother if he's alive and well when his mother passed away, but if once he's passed away, he will not get from his mother. Shmamina, that's a pretty solid proof. That proves our point. The time am I. Okay, so now as per the reason. So what is the reason? Why is it different than any other Yerusha, where you get even though you passed away? Right, like we said before, the son is Yerusha's father, even if son died before father. But time am I? Omar Abaye, we have a Gzeira Shava, it's a halacha based on Gzeira Shava, Nemra Siba Beben, Venemra Siba Bebao, we have the Lashon Siba. Siba means to redirect. If you recall, we had the halacha about Neslavchat, so during the sojourn in the Midbar, during that generation, there was a limitation, a restriction imposed on Klal Yisrael not to allow, not to facilitate any transfer of properties, of territories from one shevet to the other. So, a girl is not meant to marry into a different shevet. Why? Lest the property that she will inherit from her father get transferred to her husband. The husband is Yerusha's wife, who may be from a different shevet, or to her son, who is Yerusha as well, and maybe from a different shevet. So we have both discussions in the Pesukim. Leitisev Nachal, don't allow the Nachal to be transferred. We have it pertaining to the husband, as per his power to be Yerusha's wife. We have it pertaining to the son, as his per his ability to be Yerusha's mother. So we have a similar lushing in both contexts. Nemar Siba Beben, Nemar Siba Baal, Ma Siba Amur Baal, just like by the husband, Yerusha's wife. We have the term Siba, and there we know for a fact that Eina Baal, we compare the two contexts basically. Just like over there, we know Eina Baal Yerusha's Ishte Bekever, that a husband cannot be Yerusha's wife, Bekever. Now here Bekever means that a husband is only Yerush items, assets that his wife had in her possession, that she owned at the moment of her passing. It needs to be muhsak in her hands. But if it was just owing to her, it was coming to her, it was anticipated, but she passed away prior to getting those things, the husband is not yerush that. Because once they, when she dies, it's he loses that schus. Af siba, hamur beben, likewise, in a similar fashion. It's not exactly the same, but it's loosely connected. Likewise, by a son, Eina ben Yerush Yisimei Bekever. If the son died, it's a bit different here. The son died, but it's pretty similar. The point is they're not both connected anymore, because in this case, he died. In the previous case, she died. In this case, he died. The son died prior to the mother. So the mother cannot be merged to the son. Eina ben Yerush Yisimei Bekever. He can't be Yerush from his mother once he passed away. What will be the point? Lahanchil, Lachem and Av, which would theoretically enable him to transfer to his family, to his brother from his father's side, from a different, you know, father, let's say, but brother from mother, but that's it. He can't do that. So that's the source for this idea. Okay, we conclude with a story, which was actually a repetition of a whole piece in Gemara that we had back in the Flamid. Hahuda Amar L'Chavrei, Reuven told Shimon, look, I'm selling you all the properties, Nichsei, the bit that I bought from the fellow Bar Sisan. Nixi the Bar Sisan, Maz Benin Alach, I'm selling you all those, you know, properties. So you had, you know, 20 properties, all called Bar Sisan, they were bought from Bar Sisan, and that's included. Now there was one property which was a bit ambiguous. Have your Chadar, one piece of land, have a Mikraid with Bar Sisan. It was called, it was labeled Bar Sisan. But he claimed the seller claimed, like, what do you mean? I didn't buy this from Bar Sisson. I got this from my father. Maybe he bought it from Bar Sisson. It got its, you know, it got its label, but it was not covered by this sale of ours. That's not what I had in mind. Hava yechada aro davay mikrayes be Bar Sisson amalei. So the seller claimed to the buyer, huh? Love the be Bar Sisson. It's not really Bar Sisson. Vikruye yehuda mikray be Bar Sisson. It's just called as such. And the buyer wanted the property. Also like Rav Nachman. So they came to Rav Nachman to discuss it. Who won? The buyer. So going to Rav Nachman, the buyer wins. Amalei Rava. So Rava challenged Rav Nachman. Dina achi. Is that the correct approach to Dina Mamanis? We have a suffix. And typically you say, the one who's trying to extract the property or the money, in this case the buyer, he's got to prove his case. The onus is on the buyer, not the seller. So going to Rav Nachman, the buyer won. Going to Rava, the seller won. For Rami, now comes a contradiction. Rami, the Rava, the Rava. For Rami, the Rav Nachman, the Rav Nachman, going to seem to have a double contradiction between Rava over here and Rava elsewhere, who indicated otherwise, and Rav Nachman on Rav Nachman. Here comes another story. Reuben approached Shimon. My boys, my base, what are you doing in my house? Amalei said, what do you mean? I bought it from you. Minach Savinta. In fact, I was here many years. I've been here 3 years. Of course, I don't have the document anymore. I'm here 3 years without a complaint. That's a chazaka. That gives him the right to the property. Amalei said, the seller, Reuben says, what do you mean? He responds by saying, you didn't have a chazaka. I was sitting in the inside rooms. I was using the house all along. I let you stay here, but you didn't establish ownership. I'm here all along. I'm the user. I'm the owner. Also, according to Rav Nachman, so once again we have this conflict between buyer and seller. Rav Nachman says, seller wins. Amalei, he tells the alleged buyer, Zil, go ahead, beroyer, verify achiloscha, your usage, meaning you have to substantiate your chazaka. You have to disprove the seller's claim that he was here. You have to go bring Adam that he was not. Otherwise, you lose the property. According to Rav Nachman, the buyer wins, which is just the opposite of the previous case where he gave it to the... the seller wins, which is quite the opposite of the previous case where he gave it to the buyer. Amalei Rava the Rav Nachman. So once again, Rava challenges Rav Nachman. Do you know how I can do this? Hamayitzim mechaver alvaraya. The one who extracts, he's got to prove his case. In this case, it's the seller trying to get it back from the buyer, which is just the opposite of the previous Rava who gave it to the seller. Kasha the Rava, the Rava, the Rav Nachman, the Rav Nachman. We seem to have a double conflict, a double contradiction. Answers the Gemara like this. The Rava, Kasha, we can simply answer the apparent contradiction within Rava. Different cases, different contexts, different statuses. Hacham Meicher Kai Benichse. In the original case, where the fellow sold, you know, all the Bar Sisson properties. Who is in possession? Who's currently in possession? The seller. Okay. Therefore, says Rava, the buyer's got to prove his case. He's got to prove that this is included in the sale. Awesome. But in the case of the alleged chazaka, like Ha'akai Benichse, the buyer's been there for many years. He's sitting there. Look at his furniture. He's here. He's in possession. So that's the default assumption, that it's his. Unless the buyer, the seller can prove otherwise. That's why it makes sense. And likewise, the Rav Nachman, Ad Rachman Lakasha, likewise we can answer the stira between two Rav Nachmans, Hacha, in the case of the Bar Sisson, Hacha, Kivin, the Amalei Dvei Bar Sisson, since he offered him all the Bar Sisson properties. Well, Mekrai Dvei Bar Sisson, this property also has that label. So we assume it's included. And if you're trying to change the perception, the onus is on you. The seller has to go undo that impression and clarify the lav de bay Bar Sisson, that in fact this is not really a Bar Sisson, it's just called that way and whatever. Because you're trying to, you know, overturn the accepted, you know, notion. Ha'acha, but over here by the chazaka of the house, la yehelem nakid shtara. At best, a chazaka serves as a substitute for a shtar. Now let's say buyer would produce a shtar, a sale document, and the seller is challenging its authenticity. Wouldn't we tell the buyer, Kayim shtar chavakum benichsi, first verify, certify, authenticate the shtar, validate the shtar, and then take possession? So at most, it's like a shtar. And if there are any questions or challenges on the chazaka, you have to go and verify, clarify, and confirm that in fact it's a legitimate chazak. Hadron lach mishemes. So we had this halacha which was kasha b'dini mamonos. We explored many possibilities till we finally arrived at that case, which is actually the first suggestion we had, but went through many twists and turns till we got back to it. We accepted it as the halacha, but it was a bit difficult to understand because we didn't really have any raya to this point that a grandson gets directly from the grandfather. Rav Sheshes tells us that a son is Yerush's mother, provided he's alive during her passing, but otherwise he doesn't get it. It's comparable to the husband and the wife's Yerusha. And we concluded with an apparent double contradiction between Rav and Rav Nachman, which was resolved. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rav.